Good morning, good morning. Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. You are listening to the Michael Slate Show with me, your guest host, again this week, Sansara Taylor. Let's start out by lifting our sights.
What if women could walk down the street and look every man they encounter straight in the eye and fear nothing and not be made to feel? And not be made to feel that you're on display and to be evaluated by how you sexually titillate them. What if no more women were ever again battered, raped, assaulted, denied the right to control their own bodies? What if people who were different in their sexual orientation or just in the way they went through life, instead of being discriminated against and bullied, were valued for their difference? If that were seen as part of the great diversity of humanity.
What if? What if that really were the world that we lived in? What if that was the world that we gave to our children, to their children, to the daughters and young ones, boys, girls, children of every gender, all over this world? What if that's the future they could inherit? This is something to lift our sights to. This is something to fight for. And this is something to grapple with, how that could be made real as we approach International Women's Day coming up March 8th. Here and all over the world, it is a revolutionary holiday, an internationalist holiday. It is a liberating holiday. And this is going to be the main theme of our show here today. I am so happy to have in studio with me Annie Day, who is part of the RevCom movement. She has been working on and organizing for International Women's Day and strategizing about how this fits into the fight for a real revolution. So Annie, welcome to the studio.
I am very glad to be here, Sansara.
Great, great. So we have a lot to talk about in terms of International Women's Day. I do want to let everybody listening know that later in the show, we're going to be talking about one of the other major intensifying fault lines for global humanity, which is the war in Ukraine, which is now a proxy war between U.S. imperialists and Russian imperialists, and very dangerous, escalating with threats of World War III and nuclear war. So that'll be in the tail end of our show. We have a great interview to share with the writer-historian Paul Street, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But here, we're going to start with International Women's Day. Why don't you tell us what is the importance of this holiday and what is planned?
Well, I want to start with a invitation, a challenge, a wake up to all of you listening to this. If you are infuriated by the Supreme Court overturning the right to abortion, if you look at the newspaper in rage and outrage at a generation that's growing up with the right to decide when and whether to have a child, if you are inspired by the women of Iran and Latin America rising up for women to be free, if you are moved by the videos of the young girls tearing off their hijabs, joined by men in Iran shaking that society to their foundations, and if you have ever wondered, if you have hungered, if you have desired for women to be liberated from a world of exploitation, male supremacy, as part of ending the oppression of all forms of gender oppression, then you need to join us on International Women's Day. We're going to mark it with a march and a rally and a celebration on Saturday, March 11th, to demand break all the chains, unleash the fury of women as a mighty force for revolution. Capitalism and patriarchy, you cannot end one without ending the other. Abortion on demand and without apology. Forced motherhood is female enslavement. And that's the big invitation.
And that's part of, as I said, there are going to be gatherings across the country that the RevComs are organizing. There are other expressions. People are marking International Women's Day in many different ways and all over the world. And the origins of this holiday really are bound up with the fight for revolution, with the fight to overthrow the system that rules over us today. It's capitalism, imperialism here and around the world. And it gets to one of the slogans that you pointed out. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a little while. Capitalism and patriarchy, You cannot end one without ending the other. A lot of times people talk about International Women's Day and it gets promoted as a corporate holiday to celebrate women's achievements within this system, CEOs and other strivers to be part of this system. And of course, all the discrimination that women face in the business world, in the sports world, in academia, all that needs to be broken down. But we are talking not about the advancement of some women within this system, but the ending of the system of capitalism, imperialism, and the patriarchy that's bound up with it. You wanted to comment on that, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the liberation of women as a driving force for revolution, for the most radical revolution in human history, is breaking all oppression's chains, including the way in which the oppression of women is in the foundation, in the fabric of the earliest divisions between masters and slaves, rulers and ruled, and oppressors and oppressed. So this is a radical day, and it's a radical invitation for everyone here to be part of that. You know, this is really not understood. People really think, well, there's an economic system of capitalism, and then there's patriarchal oppression over here, and they don't actually understand the ways in which they are completely intermixed and interwoven, and why you need an actual revolution to liberate women as a part of emancipating humanity.
Yeah, why you need an actual overthrow of this system to break the chains on women and to end all oppression. And from the other end, why you can't make a revolution that's worth making if you don't take the fight for women's liberation as a key and driving force, both in making the revolution and after the seizure of revolutionary state power. This is something that is a real cornerstone of the new communism that Bob Avakian has forged, the new framework for human emancipation, which goes beyond even the most radical and liberating understanding and experience of both the revolutionary communist movements in the past and of any feminist movement or any other movement that's striving for the liberation of women, because it is going at both of these aspects and how they're bound together, patriarchy and capitalism. So we'll talk more about that. I do want to play, as part of inviting people out, as part of lifting people's sights, as part of celebrating the spirit of International Women's Day, as the internationalist holiday it is, there is this beautiful poem that was written and published at revcom.us recently. And you, Annie, did a very powerful reading of it for the Revolution Nothing Less show. It was beautifully filmed, beautifully done. And I want to play that for the audience and we could talk a little bit about it.
Because we rage. Because they took away your right to abortion and forced your sisters across the country to have children against their will. And because they're coming for birth control next. Because your young sisters still cut themselves, still think about suicide, still get bullied in the halls and shamed on social media and, yes, raped when they dare to trust. Because if you are trans and young, you are hounded by bullies and by those in power in Texas and Florida and America, and you are still stigmatized for being lesbian or gay in 2023. Because you can't even put the word woman in a sentence anymore with the word oppression without some fool raising an objection, while the horror hits worse every single day. Because our brothers and sons and dads and uncles and tios and our daughters and sisters and moms and aunties too become statistics and hashtags for saying the wrong thing, for making a wrong move, for having the wrong skin in a country that's really been wrong from the start. Because your chances of dying when you give birth in America are over 3 times greater if you are black than if you're white. Because of evictions, because of raising children in shelters, because of fascist maggots with their incitements to violence against women go viral, one worse than the next. Because of pornography being the default sex education for 9-year-olds. Because religious fanatics, be they Christian, Islamic, Hindu, or Jewish, pronounce you unclean and want to dominate and control you even more. Because women and children in Jakarta and Lagos and Mexico City and Atlanta and Kentucky and South Dakota get trafficked and vanish without a trace. Because you're told to brand yourself, think about that word, and to sell yourself with no greater ambition than to someday yourself be a player too. Because the blood and sweat and 12-hour days of billions of sisters in Asia and around the world is ground into your clothes and your phones. Because this system commodifies everything and everyone and is killing us all. Because our world could get blown up or dried up or burnt up by the powers that be for the system they run, and we haven't even had a chance. because we struggle. Because your sisters in Iran rose up against religious tyrants, cast off their headscarves, and sacrificed even their lives so their sisters could breathe free. And because men joined them across the country and even giving their lives in the cause of justice. Because your sisters in Mexico rose up against the killings and disappearances of thousands of women a year for the crime of walking this planet with a vagina. Because your sisters in Argentina and Colombia rose up in green, proudly demanding the right to abortion. Because young people in America took the streets last spring when the word leaked out on what the fascist Supreme Court was about to do and then did. Because we dare to think, to cry, and ask why, and defy those who say we are lesser, to resist and struggle, to speak out and shout no to the madness, to say yes to reason, to laugh and to dream of and work for and fight for a world that we will set free. Because we hope and dream and think for full liberation. Because bad as it is, with worse yet to come, this system is coming apart, and out of that stench we can wrench something much better. Because we have a plan and a vision for a whole better way, a real revolution with a new constitution to uproot the wrongs and put things right. Because there's a way to understand how we got into this situation and how to get out. A new communism with a scientific method we can all learn to wield. Because there's a strategy that we can use to get free against heavy odds. Because there's the leadership we need to wage that great fight. Because, as the revolutionary leader and thinker Bob Avakian says, there is not going to be any liberating struggle, any liberating real revolution that doesn't have right at the heart of it, at the core of it, the emancipation of women from every way in which they are degraded and debased and oppressed and violently suppressed. International Women's Day 2023. Be there. Shout, struggle, learn, love. Be part of the revolution. Because revolution, nothing less.
All right. So that poem really, I mean, it lifts my spirits. It ignites a sense of deep, deep, profound outrage. And it sparks a lot of hope when I hear it. Each time I've heard it, and I'm so happy to be able to share it. And you did a beautiful reading of it, Annie. What I wanted to ask about is, what difference does it make to come out in public, to join with others on International Women's Day, to be there, to not just think and harbor feelings of, I hate the way that women are treated in your heart, or I have, you know, sort of go through it as an individual. But what difference does it make for those who come out? And what difference does it make in society that there are these public manifestations? You know, I think some of it you get a feeling of when you hear that poem, but I wonder if you could speak to that. And also, I guess I'm unfairly asking you two questions at once, but also, how did that poem strike you?
Yeah, that's actually where I wanted to start. I was very moved to get to read it and to channel the outrage and the hope that I think was concentrated in the person who wrote it, Rev Common, who contributed it to revcom.us. And I think there's a way, especially right now in our society, there's so much swallowing the outrage. There's so much individually experiencing it with your head in your phones and the way in which people are completely too often allow themselves to be inured to the horror and just accept, well, this is what you have to do when you're a woman walking home at night on a dark street. You just have to hold your keys like a weapon. You just have to carry mace. You just have to suspect your best male friends, maybe. You just have to, if you're going to go on a date, you have to make sure that people know where your locations are. There's all of those things. There's all the way in which you just have to, you know, you live in the projects and you hear your neighbors and you hear your neighbor, you know, getting beat by her husband. And well, you just have to put up with that. That's just the way things are. You know that millions of women all around the world are the ones who make our clothes. You just know these things and you think you have to accept it. And there is a degradation in what happens to women in our society. And there's a degradation in the acceptance from the millions and billions of progressive people who don't actually want to live in that world. And I think there is a need for people to act, to say no, to lift their heads and realize and recognize the horrors that we're being forced to put up with, and just No, we're not. No, we're not accepting this anymore. So that's kind of part one. And I think the lifting our sights both to the inspiration of the way in which people are rising up around the world in Iran right now against very heavy odds, death sentences and torture and prison and mass poisonings, but to actually stand with our sisters in Iran, to stand with our sisters who have risen up in Mexico and Colombia against femicide and for the right to abortion, and looking at and learning from what did happen last spring with the Rise Up for Abortion Rights movement, which you helped lead. So there's the inspiration that comes from that. And then there's the hope that we are going to live in a whole better world, that we refuse to accept a world where the half of humanity that's female are so consistently debased and degraded and violently suppressed. And we are determined to overthrow the system as part of building that whole new world and as part of enabling, you know, all of humanity to flourish. So I don't know, I think that's some of what the poem makes me feel. And I think for all of those of you who are listening, this is shake the cobwebs out from your consciousness and stand up and see each other. And if there's anything in what we've said here so far that's moving you, then join us. Then join, you know, yell and dance and love and rage and hope. Yes, dare to hope, and do so with others on International Women's Day and to mark International Women's Day.
You know, one of the things, if you look at the struggle in Iran, this was a tremendously violently patriarchal, oppressive society, enslaving to women. I mean, women are enslaved all over the planet, but this is a viciously woman-hating regime. And the fury that got unleashed there by women, the power of that, it went from something that, exactly like you're saying, where women choked on it, they lived with it, they hated it in private, and they adjusted to it, and society adjusted to it. And there's a degradation in that. But when this got uncorked, it tore through that society. It was like a raging wildfire that ignited more and more women and then ignited men and people of different nationalities. And it actually tore from the regime its fundamental legitimacy. And this question of the oppression of women and eruptions of fury against that and tempering that as a mighty force for revolution is a powerful force. It's not just something horrible that needs to be fought. It's something powerful and liberating that actually brings a different future closer and can uncork the revolutionary energies and inspiration of society as a whole and tear apart a founding, cohering part of every oppressive society in the world right now, which is this patriarchy. And it can lead to the unraveling of the oppressive order as a whole. And that can happen here as well. And so I think one of the things that comes out when you join with others on International Women's Day to rage and to celebrate is you change yourself. We change ourselves and we bring closer a future where this is how everybody is living. And I think it changes what others think is possible. It's not just a chance to come and be in communion with others who feel like you, although it is that, but it is actually part of changing what's possible for the future at a time when revolution is more possible than it's been in a very long time, but that doesn't get realized if people don't act. So
this brings me to the second part of the answer to your question.
Okay.
Is exactly,
yes.
This is very briefly, is that we are in a moment where, and years ago Avakian analyzed this and it's gotten sharper and more true, that this question of the oppression or emancipation of women is going to be radically resolved one way or the other. It's either going to be resolved in violent reactionary means, or it's going to be resolved through violent revolutionary means, through bringing forward a whole different system and a whole different order. And when you sit at a moment where the fault line of this fascist enforcement of a theocratic white supremacist, male supremacist America is the oppression and domination and enslavement of women, and the system provides no answers for it, there's a potential for an explosive politically, you know, breaking open of that outrage and fury, getting fused to then the need to make an actual revolution. So that's part of people coming out right now, is to fight for an emancipatory resolution to this question and not giving in to the fascist reactionary resolution.
I think that's important. Emphasize that the fight to break the chains on women and to end all oppression based on gender and sexual orientation, this is not just a fight that women need to wage.
Mm-hmm.
It is a fight that men need to take up as well. And yes, people of all genders, but I'm zeroing in on men Because a lot of times they see this as something they can sit out. And there's a very important emphasis that Bob Avakian has put on this, that you cannot break all the chains except one. It's a challenge to everybody, but including men. I want to go to an excerpt from the interview that Andy Z and I did with him about this very question. Before I do, I want to remind you, this is the Michael Slate Show. My name is Sansara Taylor. Let's play this excerpt about why you cannot break all the chains except one with Bob Avakian.
I want to move to it, just in the time we have, to a direct question that affects the people who do want to, who do need to be part of this revolution, where you've said that, and I'm just going to read this quotation, you can't break all the chains but except one. You cannot say you want to be free of all the exploitation and oppression except you want to keep the oppression of women by men. I think while you've touched on that in this discussion of the fascists, I think this is a big, I know this is a big question among men of all strata, but it's a big, it's very important, and it's a big part of our revolution if we actually are going to get to, one, make a revolution, and two, have it a revolution that is leading towards the emancipation of all humanity. So I just, before we move off of this, I'd like you to speak to that.
Well, you know, in part, the thing about you can't do away with all oppression and, except, you know, the oppression of women. You know, you can't say you want to be for liberation, but you want to enslave women. And it goes back to the Lead Belly song and everything else. You know, like, you know, for men, including men who are brutally exploited and oppressed under the system and murderously, you know, subjected to all kinds of degradation and literal, like I said, literal murder. You know, there's still a question of there's one sphere, you know, or at least, you know, one concentrated sphere where you can act like the oppressor and feel like you're getting over. And that's, you know, that's your relationship with your woman and with women in general. You know, I mean, it comes out in the most outrageous ways, too. I just have to say this because it really gets to me. You know, you hear some of these basic, you know, and people say don't say basic, but I'm going to say basic because they're people catching hell right under the bait at the base of society. You hear some of these men, you know, say things like, you know, when you talk to them or go to them about the right to abortion and how we have to stand up for the right, and they'll say, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you know, if she didn't want to get pregnant, she should have kept her legs closed. And nobody's telling these motherfuckers, you just keep your in your pants, okay? You know, see, they don't want to hear that, right? So, you know, all this is just a way of, like, you know, women should be subordinate to men. That's what it says in the Bible, someone will tell you. You know, that's just the way it is naturally and so on. This is among the oppressed, people suffering terribly, I'm talking about, although they are not the only ones, you know, who do this by any means. And, you know, I will say, you know, just on a personal note, that for me, in my own development as a revolutionary and communist, I would say it has been a lifelong process of a continually deepening understanding of, you know, the horrific nature of the oppression of women, but also the pivotal and central role of the struggle for the emancipation of women in the overall communist revolution to emancipate all humanity from every form of oppression and exploitation. So, you know, this really is, you know, crucial in the whole struggle. There is not going to be any liberating struggle, any liberating real revolution that doesn't have right at the heart of it, at the core of it, the emancipation of women from every way in which they're degraded and debased and oppressed and, you know, violently suppressed. And, you know, this is a lot of struggle. Now, you know, look, there, I've talked about backwards that people are into, but there also are, you know, positive things where, you know, not only among young women, but even some of the young men, including among the oppressed, have taken a better stand on this because they can identify, you know, at least on a, you know, as a first step, beginning basis, they can identify with people who are being oppressed, you know, and then sometimes it's more large, there's more largeness of mind involved. They don't want oppression of any kind, you know, as much as they understand that, they're against it. So there's contention out there. But, you know, in order, like I said, in order to have this revolution, this has to be at the core of it. It's not the only form of oppression. It has to be uprooted, obviously, but it is right at the core of transforming the whole world. You know, this historic and, you know, thousands of year old oppression of women in different forms in different societies, you know, and it's been completely bound up with the division of society overall into masters and slaves, into oppressors and oppressors, exploiters and exploiters. You go back in history, it's completely bound up with that and has run through every form of oppression and exploitation, going back to days of slavery right up to the modern capitalism, imperialism, and all its forms of oppression.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
Of all the evil that will have to end.
Yes, we are going, yes, we are. Don't let us not be.
All right.
It will end.
Well, all right.
Well, all right.
Some folks are to stay.
I like that little chuckle when he says right up to the modern
forms
of capitalism, imperialism, because we're told we live in such a modern and enlightened age. And yet all the forms of degradation, enslavement of women, including from the highest court in the land, took away women's right to abortion. I mean, this is forced motherhood, is female enslavement, and it will affect people all across the country. It may not have hit people in California or New York or Chicago yet, in the same way it's hit women in Alabama and Texas and Mississippi and Tennessee. But it's coming, and it has to be stopped. And this is part of the fight on International Women's Day, and there's other things as well. That was Bob Avakian from the interviews that Andy Z and I did with him last fall on the Revolution Nothing Less show at youtube.com/TheRevComes. And I'm here in studio with my guest, Annie Day. We have just a couple minutes left on this segment. On International Women's Day, what do you want to leave our listeners with?
This is not human nature. This is not permanent. This is not how we have to live. And urgently pose now, it's going to get radically worse, or it could get radically, radically better if people come together, get connected up with the revolution. So I want to invite people to join the RevComs on International Women's Day. This is an invitation to everybody and anybody who sees the need to act. to fight for abortion on demand and without apology because forced motherhood is female enslavement, who can feel the and recognize the fact that capitalism and patriarchy, you cannot end one without ending the other, and is determined to be part of breaking all the chains to unleash the fury of women as a mighty force for revolution. So come rally and march and celebrate. People can stay connected to at the RevComs on social media. And I also want to invite everybody to call us at 323-671-9839. That is the Revolution Club's phone number here in Los Angeles. So pick up the phone, call us right now if you feel what we're saying. So that's what we want to leave people with.
Yeah, I just want to add on. You said before it's not human nature for men to dominate women. It's not been this way for the majority of human history, but that changed at a certain point. And so Bob Avakian really examines and walks through why that changed, how that changed, and why patriarchy, the systematic domination of women by men, has been a part of every society that's been divided into masters and slaves, exploiters and exploited, oppressors and oppressed, why that came to be, and how it can be ended, and why we say capitalism and patriarchy, you cannot end one without ending the other, and how you can end both. So this is, like you said, it's profoundly important for people who want to get free to wrangle with this, to deepen our understanding of it, to ask questions about it, to get into it with others. So Annie, I want to thank you for helping with this whole discussion here.
Thank you. And again, if anybody, if you lost us on the details and want to be part of it, you can just give us a call. The Revolution Club LA phone at 323-671-9839 or DM us at the RevComs.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to stick around because we're going to talk about Ukraine in a minute. But first, this is audio of women in Mexico rising up with the rapist in your path. And it is powerful. Hopefully many of you listening have seen the footage of these were manifestations. Women enacted this protest song, dance, flash mob all over Latin America and then all over the world. Oh, this is from Chile, actually. So this is the audio. Okay, so that is the righteous sound of fury and determination and courage and bravery of women from Chile that spread all over the world. It's the spirit that we need to bring into International Women's Day. Once again, you are listening to The Michael Slate Show. My name is Sansara Taylor, your guest host, and I kept Annie Day in the studio with me to stay for the next segment. We are going to shift to Ukraine and the intensifying, first of all, the intensifying war there and the intensifying danger of this erupting from what is now objectively a proxy war between U.S. imperialism and NATO on one side and Russia on the other side, both imperialist gangsters, both sides wrong, and the Ukrainian people being ground up in the middle. But the threat of this breaking out into open, direct inter-imperialist warfare with the threat of nuclear weapons, World War III, really the potential destruction of humanity. So what we want to do is play a wonderful interview that Andy Z recently did, very recently, just came out last night on the Revolution Nothing Less show with Paul Street, who's a historian, a professor, a writer for Counterpunch, among other things. He's on the editorial board of Refuse Fascism, getting into the nature of this war and a lot of the really horrible excuses for siding with one imperialist or the other that is put forward by people broadly and by the so-called left. So I want to play that. But before I do, Annie, I want to ask you to share. There are some plans and some ways for people to act against this. If you could just let people know, and then we'll play the interview.
Yeah, this is an urgent situation, and people need to wake the blank up. And I think this interview provides a lot of the cold splash of water of reality that you're about to hear. So the RevComs are calling for major manifestations for protests on Sunday, April 2nd, behind the slogans, "No U.S.-NATO War with Russia," "Stop U.S. threats against China," "No World War III." It is this system, not humanity, that needs to become extinct. We don't accept their future. It's time to get organized for a real revolution. So stay tuned for plans. We're calling for protests on Sunday, April 2nd, and that's going to build toward even more defiant and creative protests on May 1st. Mm-hmm. Because we do have to actually fight for internationalism. American lives are not more important than other people's lives, and this country is and has never been and cannot be and will not be a force for good in the world. And it's not something to lobby to ask for more money for Americans instead of what the U.S. does around the world. Those two nightmares are linked. So we have to break out of choosing between oppressors and act in the interests of humanity. And that's what this call to action is. And people should, again, stay tuned to at the RevComs and to RevCom.us and to the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs every Thursday, for more. But if you want to be part of acting and manifesting in this way, again, you can call the Revolution Club organizing phone number 323-671-9839.
Okay, so let's jump into this interview. This is Andy Z speaking with Paul Street on the Revolution Nothing Less show.
I want to welcome my friend Paul Street to the RNL show. Paul is a historian, and he's a member of the editorial board of Refuse Fascism. He has a Substack, Paul Street Report, and he writes for Counterpunch. Paul, welcome to the RNL show.
Thanks a lot, Andy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. So, Paul, you wrote an article that first appeared on your Substack blog and then on Counterpunch titled Ukraine War Reflections. And you identified 9 arguments with a movement that thinks of itself as progressive and even radical, even a left. And yet you describe this as a shattered and lame U.S. left whose arguments are darkly comedic. And we published your piece on RevCom.us. So I want to start with asking you, why did you write this piece? What provoked you?
Well, you know, first of all, it is absolutely my responsibility, our responsibility here in the United States, above all, to take aim at and criticize our own national capitalist imperialist power. I think you lose credibility if you don't acknowledge from the beginning that, yes, Putin is a butcher. Yes, Russia has a neo-fascist regime. Yes, Russia committed atrocities in Bucha and elsewhere. You know, yes, Putin's invasion is criminal. Yes, Putin did not have to go to war. He was provoked, but he was not compelled to. He was not forced to go to war. You get that out of the way, and that's true. But I don't live in Russia. Russians need to deal with that. Marxists here, socialists here need to be reaching out to socialists and Marxists and peace-oriented human beings in Russia. And Russians need to be forming a movement against their own capitalist imperialist country. We're here. We're here in the United States of America, which happens to be the number one top imperialist aggressor state, not only in the world, but in world history. And as bad as what the Russians are doing, and incidentally, what they're doing is on their own very directly proximate geographic border that has been invaded repeatedly by the West with millions of deaths, Napoleon, Hitler, coming through Ukraine, coming through Eastern Europe. I mean, think about the geographic inversion. What would the United States be doing if Russia or China were involved in a military alliance with Mexico or Canada, you know, directly on our borders, you know? But so it's here, and nothing Russia has done is awful as what Russia is doing, and it is criminal, and it is horrible, and Putin belongs behind bars. Absolutely. But this does not compare in scale to what the United States has done in Iraq, to what the United States has done in Afghanistan, what the United States did historically in Central America and in Southeast Asia. There is no bigger, more crass and cynical violator of international law than the United States of America. It is the number one imperialist aggressor state, and therefore has no moral or legal ground to stand on, really, seriously. And this is understood around the global South. It's completely understood across most of the world that the United States has no ground whatsoever to stand on in accusing people of breaking international law. It's exactly what it has done. Joe Biden himself led the cheers on the Democratic side of the U.S. Senate in 2002 for the use of force authorization to let George W. Bush invade Iraq illegally and on false pretenses if he wanted to. And guess what? He did. And millions died.
You decimate the position of the what you call national U.S. chauvinism, I believe, that the U.S. is defending Ukraine's right to self-determination, a claim that is bound up with Biden's characterization of this war as a war for democracy against Putin's autocracy. So I'd like you to speak a little bit about this, not just in terms of the left, but though they do completely take up these terms of democracy, but its effect more broadly on the masses of people here.
Well, I think in a lot of complex historical situations, and this is a doozy, as I say it as a historian, there's a lot of things going on at the same time. There is, at some level, there's a legitimate struggle for self-determination by the Ukrainian people. They have, in fact, been illegally and criminally invaded. There's a Russian imperial objective that in some ways, in some really out of whack hyperbole, Putin announced on the day of his invasion. You know, there's imperial objectives there and material class interests on the part of Russian oligarch and all of this. But the United States moved very quickly, I would say really almost from the outset, to leap onto the Ukrainian cause to make something much more out of it. And they said it. They said the quiet part out loud. The leading general, the leading commander, Austin, was in Poland and said flat out at a press conference that we hope to weaken Russia. We hope to weaken Russia. Biden himself, some say it was a slip up, was heard in Poland early on to say that Putin should no longer stand can no longer be the leader of Russia, which, gee, sounded kind of regime changing. And that's certainly how people around much of the rest of the world must have understood it. So it went way beyond defending Ukrainian right to self-determination and very quickly became something that was very much about an inter-imperial geopolitical conflict with a perceived imperial rival, which, by the way, is fighting on its own direct southwestern border, right, which is no one ever seems to want to talk about. And like in the U.S. invasion of Iraq, it was necessary to have a whole propaganda ideological framework and set in place to justify this provocation. And we don't have all the time to do all the history, but the U.S. and NATO have been provoking Russia, what's called poking the bear, ever since the fall, well, and even before the end of the Soviet Empire. And so they say this is and you see parts of the left playing along with this rhetoric that this is a great struggle between democracy represented by the Ukrainians and supposedly the West and the U.S. and autocracy and authoritarianism represented by Russia. Well, there's no doubt whatsoever that Russia is an autocratic, right-wing, authoritarian, even in its own kind of way, a Christian white nationalist state. It's horrific. It's some argue, like Jason Stanley, that Putin is a neo-fascist. Okay, so that's true. But what about the U.S.? What, democracy? This is an open plutocracy sliding in to neo-fascism. It's a failing bourgeois democracy where public majority public opinion is irrelevant and trumped and defeated again and again on one issue after another. What? We're the friends of democracy, and we're also the key sponsor and ally and funder and equipper and trainer and overseer of the Judeo-fascist state of Israel and its occupation of Palestine, of the open absolutist beheader regime in Saudi Arabia, of the dictatorship in Egypt. We are on the side of a right-wing neo-fascist type of coup in Peru right now. We have a history of backing third world fascist regimes, dozens of them over many decades.
Well, it's important that people understand the actual reality on the one hand, and also understand the batch of lies and propaganda that they are fed. In fact, Avakian wrote right after the start of the war, I believe in April of last year, of 2022, quoting the famous saying that the first casualty of war is the truth. But I'd like to talk in conclusion, or as a last main question here, about the stakes of this war and the dangerous head in the sand approach that too many people in this country have. You know, I guess we probably both grew up with Alfred E. Newman's infamous motto of "What me worry."
What me worry? I don't even care. What me worry? Worrying can't get you anywhere.
So perfect for America and an American so-called left who's fatted on the spoils of imperialism. You wrote that a bunch of people, including no small number of left supporters of Ukraine on the one side and Russia on the other. Now, you use more colorful language, but on the one hand, these two sides are starting to remind you of Slim Pickens playing Major Kong at the end of Doctor Strangelove. So your thoughts about that?
It is just astonishing. I have heard from numerous people who are left identified and consider themselves socialists, whatever they mean by that, that really the risk of World War III coming from this is low, unlikely. That has been said to me repeatedly. It's unlikely. It probably won't happen. And it sort of raises this sort of basic question of, did you see that the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists just put the clock closer to midnight? The closest it's ever been in history. How do you just discount that? And this raises this other question of what is an acceptable level of risk of World War III? I mean, really, what, 5%, 10%? So would you like to play Russian roulette? It's just insane to me. You know, it only takes one World War III to create a nuclear winter and end life on Earth. It's just madness. And Biden himself said, we're looking possibly at Armageddon. The New York Times last Sunday had a really interesting piece. I think it was by Roger Cohen, longtime European correspondent. This thing is looking like it's going to just go into a multi-year slog, you know, with the bodies just piling higher and higher. And Putin and his pit bull Medvedev and others saying flat out, we will not, existentially, we will not tolerate a decisive victory on their own on our own borders. And so what? And then the people on the left tell me, well, they're bluffing. They don't really mean it. Really? Okay. Let's find out if that's true. And, you know, because Zelensky runs to these capitals and there's this dance going on. You had a section on this show a while back about this where, you know, he jumps around and begs for, he wants tanks. Now we don't have tanks. Okay, give him tanks. Oh, he wants this military hardware and he wants these defensive missiles. And he wants this. Now, freaking Biden has actually popped up in Kiev itself. How provocative is that? Imagine Xi Jinping or Putin showing up in Mexico City, you know, as part of a military alliance and during a war between Mexico and the United States of America, you know, and probably F-16 seem inevitable at some point. Then maybe a no-fly zone. It just gets worse and worse and worse, and nobody can give in and nobody can back down, and these things take on a life of their own. It's just madness to pretend
I think we have to bring out the biggest problem we face right now is that the interests of the masses of people of the world are not on the stage. And until the interests of the masses of people are on the stage, where people in this country and other countries are acting against this war and demanding it stop, the choices will appear to people as between these two sides. And see, this is part of the crime of these f-ing leftists, okay? This is the crime, and it's not the first time a left has done this, where they take the side of one or the other bourgeoisie and they leave the masses choosing between two murderous entities, instead of getting out there themselves, at risk, and standing up and saying, no, this war has to stop. Now, we believe, as revolutionary communists, RevComs, that this opens up the possibility of a necessity for a revolution to replace a system that would even do such a thing. And this is very important, because otherwise it is just talk. And their talk is talk that's leading to the status quo. And Vakin has made this point for years. The politics of the possible is a politics of monstrosity. And we are seeing that right now on a world scale level. And we have to act to stop this. I think this is very important in terms of what sits before us and why. You know, people need to understand the terms of this, and they need to understand that those who would pretend to be progressive and say, well, you shouldn't give the money for a war, you should give the money for jobs, that's actually has nothing to do with the nature of imperialism, and it leaves people paralyzed. It leaves them paralyzed to actually act in their own interests, which are absolutely opposed to this whole system.
Well, yeah, and I want to second all of that. I want to add something, which is I'm hearing people on, again, left identified, making the analogy between when Indonesia genocidally, and with U.S. green light, by the way, invaded East Timor. Wrong analogy. This is a very different sort of historical circumstances. You want the best one that I can think of, potentially, is the Cuban Missile Crisis. Which is when the midnight clock really was the closest that it ever was. And I would really like people to study that and look back on some of the literature and look up the histories of the Cuban Missile Crisis, because it did get out of control. It's almost a miracle. My father told me this. People were calling each other up on the telephone and saying goodbye with some very good reasons. And but for the decision of one Soviet sub-commander to oppose the decision of a higher up commander to go ahead and use a tactical nuclear weapon in the Saragossa Sea in the South Atlantic on Black Saturday in October of 1962, we wouldn't even be here talking about any of this. These things can escalate out of control like that. The Slim Pickens analogy I was making was from the movie that was so popular called Dr. Strangelove that helped drive the rise of the New Left to some extent in the 1960s, which depicted precisely such a situation.
Well, look, I think that's actually a good place to end. So, Paul, I want to thank you again for being on the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show and for continuing to write columns that get up on Counterpunch, as well as your own Substack blog and report that makes a big difference. And we've got to get out there and organize more people to get into more platforms where we can start fighting for the truth. And that's going to involve putting some bodies on the line and getting out there and fighting against this war and for the interests of humanity. So thank you for being on the RNL show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Andy. Great to talk.
Okay.
Okay, so that was Paul Street speaking with Andy Z. As they said, that was from the Revolution Nothing Less show at youtube.com/TheRevComs, the weekly show. I wanted to share it with you here on the Michael Slate show because there's so much that people are trapped between, oh, we got to side with the U.S. because what Russia did was wrong. Well, what Russia did and is doing is wrong. But siding with the U.S. is only escalating the wrong. It's the U.S. is waging a proxy war aimed at, as you just heard, not defending the people of Ukraine, but delivering a defeat, a strategic defeat to Russia, their rival gangster imperialist, and a lesser rival compared to the U.S., and guilty of lesser crimes compared to what the U.S. has done and is still doing all over the world. So I want to take advantage of the fact that I have Annie Day still here in studio with me to reflect on what you just heard.
I just want to underscore what Andy just spoke to at the end of that interview, and people can go watch the exchange, which is very refreshing to hear. But Andy emphasized the importance of, but there is a global dynamic happening here between oppressors, and it is oppressive imperialist powers. Yes, the greater one, the U.S., and the lesser but still imperialist gangster, Russia. We have to break that dynamic by taking responsibility to oppose, first and foremost, the actions of this imperialist, the U.S. And it, by virtue of acting, we can change those global dynamics. We are not just hostage. We are not just held hostage by these imperialist powers. We have to take responsibility to plant the pole and to change those global dynamics by acting in the interests of humanity. That's what we're aiming to do on Sunday, April 2nd. And we invite everyone listening to be part of planning those, to be strategizing. How are we going to act creatively and defiantly to challenge this American chauvinism and to challenge these and transform the incredibly dangerous situation that is happening with these imperialist powers threatening to blow up the world. So we are going to act on Sunday, April 2nd, and building towards May 1st, no U.S.-NATO war with Russia, stop U.S. threats against China, no World War III. It is this system, not humanity, that needs to become extinct. We don't accept their future. It's time to get organized for a real revolution. So join us. Be part of this. Be part of changing the whole world. If you want to hook up with this, you can call the Revolution Club organizing phone, 323-671-9839. Or DM us at the RevComs. And then also join us for the actions on International Women's Day, the march and rally next Saturday.
Okay, Annie, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having me.
I also want to thank Gary Baca for engineering all week, every week. I want to thank Henry Carson, assistant producer to The Michael Slate Show. I want to thank the entire Revolution Nothing Less team for the production of the interviews and so many other resources we borrow from them here. And Outer National, the future rock band whose music we use at the top of the show. My name is Sansara Taylor. I am pleased to be your guest host here on The Michael Slate Show. Once again, our love to Michael Slate. I'll talk to you next week.
Just drive through the square.
Drive through the square.
In tri-colored rags. Fist in the air.
Fist in the air.
Hail your flag. Did you now? Did you? Did you now? They'll rise in the street.
Rise in the street.
Face in the crowd. March to the beat.
March to the beat.
Did your faith make you proud?
Is it time now
to take cover?
Is it time now
to draw the blinds?
Is it time now
for bread and water?
Too late.
No sweet cakes, no wine.
When the people demand
gangway, Pauline and Claire, took a king from his lair. To think that your dreams could rip holes in the air. Did you now?
Did you now?
Did you now?
Did you now?